Welcome to Attention to Detail, the classical music listening guide, where we give you the tools to understand, appreciate, and enjoy listening to classical music. My name is Hannah Reffitt, and I have the great pleasure of being the manager of artistic planning for the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. And I'm joined here with my co-host and the ISO's associate conductor, Jacob Joyce. Hey, Jacob, how are you?
I'm good, Hannah. How are you?
Very well. Jacob, why don't we start off by you telling our listeners the purpose of this podcast?
Yeah, so the purpose of this podcast is to give our listeners, whether they be musicians or especially if they're non-musicians, a user-friendly listening guide for classical music. And over the course of the next several episodes, we'll introduce some techniques that anyone, regardless of their musical background, can use today, tomorrow, whenever they'd like, to build their skills of listening to classical music, to build their own unique classical music listening practice that brings them more confidence, more enjoyment, more meaning when they go to the concert hall, when they listen in their own home. And so it's really meant to help anyone and everyone listen to more classical music and listen to classical music in a more meaningful way.
So since this is a podcast about listening to music, why don't we start off by listening to some music?
Yeah, that's an excellent idea. So I'm going to play a short clip of music here, and it's about 30 seconds, and then we'll come back and talk about it. I actually lied. We're not quite going to talk about it yet. I'm going to ask our listeners and you, Hannah, to do something. The name of this podcast, of course, is Attention to Detail. And one of the main things that we're going to want people to do is to really pay attention to what they're hearing. And so we'll learn more about what that actually means. But I want our listeners now, if it's possible, and Hannah, you can do the same with me right now. I'll do it as well. If anyone needs to pause the podcast here or come back to this spot, that's certainly fine. If you're running on the treadmill or driving, it may be hard to multitask. But when you get the chance, really try to put everything down. It's only a 30-second clip of music. Kind of clear your mind. And really, really listen to this clip very, very closely. Have you watched Marie Kondo?
Tidying Up?
Yes.
It's great.
Yeah, it's a fantastic show. I love Marie Kondo. And one of the things she does, you know, is she thanks the house or whatever before she cleans up. So same thing. If you need to thank the music for being there for you to listen to, by all means, do whatever you need to get yourself ready and really pay attention to this clip now as though you had to sing it back to me or to reproduce it or in some way. Try to catch as many of those details as you can. So here's this clip one more time. So we paid attention that time. Hannah, I'm curious. You were listening to both of those clips. How did you feel about those two clips? What was your listening experience like? How was it? Did it change at all?
Yeah, it completely changed on both of them. I think for me, just as a disclaimer for listeners, I don't have a background in classical music, but it's not something that I've grown up doing or listening to, but I've come to love it. So that first listen for me, it, like for a lot of people that are new to classical music, they can feel intimidated by it. So I quickly pushed away that that intimidation. And for me, where I typically go when I listen to classical music is I see more scenic related visuals that for me are evoked from the music itself. But then the second, so for the first one, I saw a prairie, I saw maybe people dancing. And then for the second one, I really, through your direction, Jacob, really focused in on what I was hearing. So I heard a violin and a piano, and it seems very segmented. That clip was segmented to me. So it was, I think, three sections, I would say. The first one and the third one are separated by that very loud, dramatic violin in the middle. So that was my second listening experience.
So interesting. It sounds like the first listen, you had a much more imagery-driven, yeah, scenic approach. And the second one, I would say, was much more kind of objective.
Yep.
You tried to catch more of the specific details of the instruments. That's great. There's no right or wrong answer. Neither of those experiences are any better or worse than the other. But I want now you to try, and our listeners to try, this one more time. And now that we've kind of activated our attention a little bit and hopefully gotten more out of that clip than the first time, more information, let's try directing that attention in some sort of specific direction. And that direction can really be anything that you want. Some suggestions include, if you want to listen for repetition, for example, you can listen for if something comes back. If it comes back, is it similar? Is it different? If it comes back differently, how is it different? You could listen to the emotional quality of the music. If it evokes any emotions in you, try to really identify very specifically what those emotions are. If there's multiple, you can try to identify those. You could listen for the kind of sound quality in the music. You mentioned that correctly, that there's a violin and a piano. You could listen to the sound of those two instruments, how their sounds are similar, how they differ, how their sounds change over the course of the clip. And really, you can take this any direction you want, but the goal is to kind of direct that attention to something that you're trying to more intentionally listen for. So let's try this clip once more. Don't tell me what you're going to listen to, but choose something to direct your attention to, and then we'll come back, and this will be the last time that we hear this clip. So tell me, what did you choose to direct your attention towards, and how was it? Was it any different?
Very different. I'm going to need an expert's confirmation on this, but I think I picked up that the first and the third sections that I picked up on that my second listen, the piano and the violin, they swap roles in between the first and the third section.
That exactly right.
Yes. Yeah. So I think for me, I listened to that, and then I also listened artistically. So that second section, that strong, loud violin in the middle, I see the dancers from my first scenic listen, they're just fighting over who's leading that dance.
Huh.
So first it's the violin leading, and then the piano following, and then they fight, and then they're back dancing again.
Very interesting. I mean, I've heard this piece probably 500 times. I've never thought of it that way. That's so interesting that you, and it's totally, I can totally see it now. I mean, there's a role reversal after that interruption. And that's great. I mean, hopefully that gives a little bit of a different listening experience. And regardless of what anyone comes up with, the goal is just to kind of activate the attention and direct it to something in the clip. So fantastic.
Great exercise. Really great.
So I think one of the goals of doing that exercise is to illustrate the main kind of point of this podcast. Of course, it's called Attention to Detail. And our goal is to set out some specific techniques that people can use that are attention driven, that will direct the attention to ways in which we can listen to classical music. And the point is that there's no real prior knowledge needed. Our goal is that if people can just activate their attention, and everybody has attentional capacity, then there's no necessity for music theory or music history, anything like that, to come into play. Of course, that can help to inform us if we're trying to listen to classical music, but our hope is that we can introduce some of these attention-driven techniques that can help people build their own listening practice and find ways that will be more approachable for them, more meaningful when they go to the concert hall, and hopefully develop this listening to classical music into a hobby, to a passion that may even last a lifetime.
So this all reminds me of this article I read last summer by Anthony Tomasini. And in the article, he says that knowledge of the art form is not a prerequisite for those that are interested in classical music but don't have a knowledge of the art form. And that, for me, sits really well because I don't have a background in the art form, yet I work with people that have been musicians for their whole lives, and it can be incredibly intimidating. But again, in the article, he says that just letting your ears serve you is the ultimate guide to appreciating classical music, and I think that that's really, really great.
Well, that's fantastic, because I think the point, and it's great to hear that from the Anthony Tomasini, who's the lead classical music critic of the New York Times, the point that I want to emphasize, and that I think hopefully Anthony Tomasini is emphasizing as well, is this idea that all that's really required is a curious mind, an attentive mind. And so I think to illustrate what we really mean by attention, let's take a example. Say that you eat lunch here every day at Hilbert Circle Theater. When you go out to lunch, busy day, what do you generally get?
Chipotle.
Me too, actually. I love Chipotle. So what do you, if you, standard day, what do you order at Chipotle?
Bowl to go, brown rice, black beans, fajitas. If I want to eat meat today, chicken. Sometimes. And then I'll get pico and verde and lettuce, and that's my bowl.
What's the, what determines whether you're eating meat that day?
If I want to eat meat, so it's more environmental.
Oh, it's not like a mood thing.
No.
Okay, well, me too. That is very, very similar to my bowl. In fact, I had a Chipotle bowl today, which was exactly that. I did get chicken today.
Okay.
Sometimes I love that you can get the guac if you don't get chicken.
Yes.
You don't have to pay extra for guac. Exactly. So anyways, sidebar. So you normally, if you get Chipotle for lunch and it's something that you do routinely, you might eat that at your desk. You might eat that with friends. You're not really paying very close attention to the Chipotle that you eat on a given day, especially when it becomes a routine, when you order kind of the same bowl most days, like I do, like you do. And that's not really what I would consider an attentive food eating experience. Now, contrast that with, let's say you or I are lucky enough to go to a super expensive restaurant where they have a tasting menu, for example. It's a really fancy, nice chef, and this chef has constructed for you a tasting menu. Now, just by the nature of that environment, that experience, you're probably going to pay a lot of money for this meal. The chef is going to craft this meal very carefully. You're not even choosing what you're eating, but you are going to pay very, very close attention to that meal that you're eating. You're going to notice how well everything is cooked. You're going to be really interested in how the flavors interact with each other. You might notice what dish comes after the next dish. You might experience flavors that you've never experienced before, especially because you're not choosing your own food. But when you go, you would almost feel like you've shortchanged yourself if you paid so much money for a meal and you don't really taste the food that you're hearing. And for me, not the food that you're hearing, the food that you're tasting. Mm. That brings me to what I was about to say, which is that it's very similar to music in that just like the way that you taste your food, to activate your attention when you're listening to classical music is to pay attention in the same way that you would were you at a fine restaurant with a tasting menu. Because if you think about what it means to go to a classical concert, and let's also be clear, for example, here at the ISO, tickets are $15. Mm. You know, it's much cheaper than a nice meal. But if you go to a classical concert, it's the same concept. You know, the conductor, the orchestra, the ISO, whoever it may be, has curated this experience for you. They've put together a tasting menu of sorts of really fantastic pieces that they believe in and that they believe deserve your attention, deserve your critique. And so much like a fine dining experience, it would be a shame to not pay attention to that and really, quote unquote, taste the food that you're tasting. In the case of music, it's hear the music that you're listening to. So let's reel it back just a little bit. And very quickly, we should probably actually introduce ourselves, right? Because this is our first podcast. People might not know who we are, anything about us. So Hannah, why don't you give us a rundown of who you actually are?
Sure. That's such a tough question. So my name is Hannah Reffitt, and I am the manager of artistic planning for the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. And like I mentioned before, I don't have a background in classical music. The first live classical music experience that I was 22, and I had just started working for the ISO. So hopefully that's, I hope, eye-opening to some people that anyone can listen to classical music. I have an arts background, though. I studied theater for a little bit in college, and I grew up listening to music, just not classical music. So that's me,
Jacob. How did you get this job? Because like
how did I get this job? I ask myself that every day because I feel so lucky to work here. I'm born and raised from Indiana, and I graduated from school thinking about arts admin, but getting a master's in arts admin. But I wanted to work for a little bit before going into that. So I got the best job in the arts in the state of Indiana here at the ISO. And I'm talking to you here today. It's been great. It's fantastic.
Well, you got your master's in arts admin on the job, I'm sure.
For sure. Absolutely. Jacob, tell us about yourself.
So I am, as you mentioned, currently here working as the associate conductor of the ISO. I have been around classical music my entire life. I played the violin from a very young age, and I switched to primarily being a conductor a few years ago. It's something I've been doing for a while, but it was hard for me to hang up the violin because I love playing the violin so much. But I've been primarily conducting for the last few years, and this is my first season at the ISO. It's like you said, the best job. You said in the state of Indiana, for me, it's the best job in the world. I love coming to work every day.
Oh, you're making me look bad.
So, you know, no, it's I love conducting. I love classical music, and it's a great orchestra. So that's a little bit about myself.
Great. Two Midwesterners talking to you.
Exactly right. I failed to mention that I'm from Michigan, so just up the road. And like you said, you're from Indiana, so... We're both from this area. We can handle this cold.
Yes.
You
know? Yeah. We just put away the parkas, though. Thank God.
Exactly. Yeah. It's the first nice day here in April.
For those of you listening out there, you probably can't tell, but both Jacob and myself are of the millennial generation. And this is something that we talk about a lot, Jacob, is that the millennial generation is statistically shown to be the most educated currently on the planet. And that's partly because we've been in school for the longest. So, Jacob, what do you think is about the millennial generation that is maybe uniquely suited for classical music?
Well, I think that the fact that millennials have been in school so long maybe points to a, like you said, we're coming, a lot of millennials are either just entering the workforce or have been working for a little while now. Mm-hmm. And millennials, I think you and I both agree, maybe partly as a function of having that education, are very curious and very interested in new things, almost maybe to a fault, because I do think we also, of course, have all grown up in this culture of Instagram and Netflix and sensationalized entertainment. And I know myself, for most of my friends, people have tons of interests, but they're often very fleeting. They're very quick. We can get distracted easily. And I think that actually people are starting to realize that. People are starting to tire a little bit of the void that this rapid fire culture of Instagram, Facebook, you know, Netflix, all of this stuff kind of creates. And I've seen this with a lot of my millennial friends, acquaintances, that people are really looking now for true kind of meaningful experiences to actually engage their curiosity. And I think that classical music, as I hope we've already gone a little way in demonstrating in this podcast, but we will certainly continue to try to demonstrate, is something that can not only provide meaning, but is challenging, demands attention, is a really great life skill to develop. And the millennial generation might be uniquely suited to coming to this art form for the first time right now, because there is that curiosity among a lot of people, and that craving for meaningful experience. There is also, of course, a certain lack of attention in our generation, because it's not something that we cultivate. And so it's both a challenge and I think a great opportunity for millennials to be able to engage their attention in something like classical music, and to really be able to find a lot of meaning from this world that can give you enough meaning to sustain a lifestyle. I mean, I've never been bored a single day working in classical music.
It's definitely not a bingeable art form.
No, certainly no. Not a bingeable art form.
Yeah, and I don't think that it's just well suited for millennials. I think it's actually very well suited for this today's day and age.
Yes,
everyone's so much on their phones, like you mentioned, so much accessible entertainment.
Yeah,
but there's something about classical music that really, if you're a curious person, then it serves you.
Right.
It can really serve you.
Yeah, so it's a good point. I don't think we want this podcast is hopefully for everybody. It's by no means only for millennials, but I think it's a great thing to come to in 2019.
Yet there's still this level of intimidation around classical music, and that interests me because there are other areas of the arts, like going to a play or an art museum, that people might not know so much about those art forms, yet they feel welcome in those environments. But from your vantage point, Jacob, what is so intimidating about classical music? I have a few thoughts, but I'm wondering what you're thinking.
Yeah, I think you've hit on something that's certainly very challenging about the world of classical music. Like you said, I mean, other art forms, other forms of entertainment seem much more accessible. And I think to a certain extent, that's the nature of music, abstract music. If you think about music compared to other art forms, as you mentioned, if you take visual art is made up of forms that we see every day. They might be abstracted, but they're still you know, you're seeing things that you see in everyday life. You're seeing color. You're seeing nature. You're seeing people. Those are things that we see with our eyes every day. Literature is in a language that we understand. It's about human characters. It's about human emotions that we experience. And the language is something that we speak every day, we think in. But music, it doesn't have that same relatability, you know, I mean, we hear sounds every day, but we don't hear musical language in the sense of classical music language every day by any stretch, especially if you're not like me and, you know, working this job where I listen to 8 hours of music a day. But it's something that's much more abstract and much less readily familiar in our lives. And that's, I think, what makes it challenging. If you think about music as a kind of language, it's almost like it's a endless string of metaphors. So you take a metaphor. Metaphor is something that is very hard for young children to understand because it requires that kind of artistic mind where you have such a great grasp of language that I could say something like the leader raised his steel arm, and you would know that his arm is not actually necessarily made out of steel. It might be an implication of what steel has a kind of domineering, imposing quality, and you might be able to associate with that. And with music, it's kind of this endless string of metaphor in that way, that if you're not intensely familiar with the language, then it's not going to be as readily accessible as something like literature or like art. And so I think that that's what makes it intimidating in a way, because there's not a relatability factor. And that's certainly contributed to the classical music world being somewhat stuffy, somewhat challenging for people to get themselves into. But I would also encourage our listeners to see that as an opportunity, because with that kind of level of abstraction and level of metaphor, if we want to call it that, comes what I would say is the most opportunity for interpretation, for the ability to find meaning, because there really is, in a way, there's no realistic objectivity in music. I mean, it's so subjective to the listener's own interpretation, their own experience. And so in a way that can also be very liberating for people, because they think there's a right answer, but there really is not. You know, there's no right answer. And so what I hope to emphasize in this episode, but certainly in future episodes, is that we can try to get towards meaning, but there's no correct way to do that.
So what's the takeaway from this podcast that the listener can do tomorrow? Next week.
Yeah, I think so. The takeaway from this episode and something that I would encourage people, if they are so inclined to do so or to practice, is simply that idea of paying attention. You know, you can certainly do this in the comfort of your own home. Just go on YouTube, search classical music. You can look online to find some composers that you might be interested in, but just turn on a piece of classical music and kind of practice, if you can, in any way that you'd like, focusing your attention and just hearing that kind of higher level of detail than like the exercise that we did at the beginning of the podcast, just really trying to catch as much as you can. And of course, this is something you can also do at the concert hall if you decide to come to the Indianapolis Symphony next week or whatever symphony is in your hometown. You can do that there as well. You just come to the concert. It's actually one of the best places to pay attention. There will be no or very little noise to distract you. You'll get to sit in a chair and just direct your attention to the performance and know that if you've done that, you've done your job. But I'd encourage people to practice that skill, because as we get into the real nitty-gritty of some of the techniques that we're going to introduce on these podcasts, it will be very helpful to have your attention activated and to be able to turn on that switch very quickly when you're listening to classical music.
For those that aren't familiar with classical music that don't know pieces and names, what's something that you would recommend for the listener to study, to listen to? I would say a jam for me right now is Beethoven 7.
Oh, Beethoven 7, by all means. If you want to go listen to Beethoven 7, just start with the biggest fish to fry. It's one of the greatest pieces ever composed.
True jam.
Yeah, so Beethoven 7th Symphony, if you want to do that, by all means. Any of these composers whose name you've maybe heard before, Mozart, Beethoven, Brahms, Bach, Wagner, Mahler, take anyone and just give it a listen and really pay attention and see, try to find what their music is all about. Beethoven 7 is a great recommendation. It's as good as any piece to direct your attention to. So just go out, find a piece that you'll be inclined to listen to and give it a go.
Sounds good.
For more information about this podcast, you can find us at attentiontodetailpod.com, where you'll find a list of techniques presented in these episodes and a 2-week program for starting your own listening practice. You can also find us on all of your favorite social media channels. We encourage you to follow us, subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and if you enjoy the show, please give us a rating. We hope to see you soon at a concert.